You know, the seating in New York at the theaters, it's designed purposefully to be uncomfortable.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. This is true.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So the whole notion of actually why the seats are tight is because when you have a visceral reaction, if you remember when you were kids, like you would lay down and you put your head on somebody's stomach and they would start laughing, then you would start laughing, and then the next person would start laughing, and like all of a sudden you were all laughing. You had no idea what you were laughing for, right? There's something about the actual physical vibration of the people next to you. And that's why the audiences are kind of packed together. There's this physical vibration. I'm speaking New Age right now, but it's true. I swear.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I'm
a really down to earth guy. But there's a physical vibration that happens with the audience that, because of that, you are literally physically connected. And you know, with this, with the armrest, right? You're physically connected to people who are next to you, who you know and who you don't know.
Win all in, play my cards right.
This podcast exists because of the team at CADCM. At CADCM, we make content creation enjoyable. We are on a mission to help leaders create content, content that will improve lives, content to be proud of, content that fosters community. We know through firsthand experience how content brings people together, and we love helping make that happen. We produce podcasts, short form videos, blog posts, and other written works, while also providing support in website development, social media management, and strategic planning. And we would be excited to help you. Visit CADCM.com to learn more, or feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn or Twitter. I was super excited when I had heard from your team that had reached out. My family, like, and I'll back into the story a little bit, but my daughter, I have three kids, my middle child, when I say like loves theater, just everything. So you come to my house, if she's at home, you're going to hear music, you're going to hear her singing. It's just going to be nonstop.
That's awesome.
And it's amazing. She just joined the Blumenthal Young Ambassadors. So she goes and is an usher and just tries to get involved with it at her school, whether it's performing or is loving it. Like, she's ready to go to New York again here soon. We're going to try to get there next month. And so she was just in a production of Radium Girls.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the play they had. And then she's auditioning now for Freaky Friday, which is the musical they're going to do.
Is that at the school or is that?
That's going to be at the school.
At the school, yeah.
That's at her school. And recently she's been doing productions for the one she did, Wizard of Oz and the Addams Family.
Yeah.
And so it just is so in love with it. And so you see people, and I heard you on the podcast Conversations, I believe. And so I could just, your passion, it comes alive listening to you talk about your love for theater and where it came from, right? And backing up to your beginnings. And maybe that's a place to start with this conversation, because you know, I just mentioned, like, if we go to New York, you know, my daughter wants to go, we want to go see certain shows, right? We want to see Hamilton for the third time.
Yeah.
It's very expensive. Tickets, sporting events, theater, it's very expensive. It is very hard. And I think that's a big part of what you're doing to include everyone in finding people's love of theater. Like, they might not even know how much they love it, right? And so how are we doing that? Like, what is the plan now going forward? And we're going to bounce around a lot to involve everyone in like this passion that people can have for theater.
You know, art shouldn't be a privilege. It should be a right.
Mm.
And I think that's where it starts. The arts and humanities, the study of the human experience, right? I think that's at its core what theater does. It reflects. It gives you an opportunity, you know, even when people laugh and have these positive energy experiences in a live theater experience, it's because in the moment that you're reflecting on something or it's resonating with you, there's something that's universal. There's a universal truth that's resonating with you. And then there's universal truths that resonate with you in other ways that you know, stir up something that may be not so positive, and that's okay too.
Yeah.
But the thing that makes theater different than film and television is the fact that it's atemporal, right? It's a temporal art form, so it only exists in the moment that it's occurring. And the other is that it's communal, right? So In theater school, they teach you about the communion between the artist, the actors and the audience. And so this idea that I'm on stage, I'm saying these lines, I'm telling the story, and that information is going out to the audience. The audience is processing the information, and then there's energy, nonverbal communication, and sometimes verbal communication that actually comes back to the actors. And there's been shows that you've been to, they'd be like, oh my gosh, that was amazing performance. You know it, and the performers know it. Oh, it's on stage in that moment. And it just explodes and makes the experience something that is of a completely different nature than any other experience, right? And then there's days that, the Yankees don't play well. Right? They lose the game. And, And that kind of happens. And I think that concept of that it's kind of elusive, it can be elusive, is what keep people coming back to the theater to keep chasing when it's really great, it's transformative. Now, what does that do? Well, the transformative nature of theater by the very existence of what the product is, if I should be so base in calling it a product, right? Is that humans get to look at other concepts and ideas and have a empathetic response to what's happening. And sometimes you can face thoughts and emotions and situations that you wouldn't normally be able to face with real people in the room. And you can digest that information in a meaningful way that then changes who you are and how you view that, right? So for instance, the example I always give is, is when I saw this musical, Serafina, and, it's about apartheid South Africa. And so what the hell did I know about apartheid South Africa in 1985 as an 11-year-old in New York? And so this 11-year-old white kid in New York, learned a tremendous amount about it, and it really shaped my fundamental view on the world and my fundamental views on race, right, and class on the world. And so it was phenomenally transformative and educational, that 1.5-hour moment in time.
Yeah,
that's what theater does, and I think that's why it's essential for young people to be exposed to theater at a very young age. And it really helps them be able to navigate complex emotions and navigate the world and complex ideas in a way that allows to show the challenge of what the idea is, not just a one-sided soundbite, which is part of what, technology does today, but how an issue can be complex in its nature, because issues are complex, right? They are not black and white. And so it should be a right for young people to have theater. Now, how do we do that? The cost of going to a Broadway show. I mean, look, I'm in the industry and I got two girls and my wife, and we want to buy tickets for four, and I, slightly choke when I'm going to buy, buy tickets, Much like everybody else, it's like, oh, you want to see that? That sounds like a great Christmas gift. Awesome. Okay. maybe you can swing that for Christmas. It's just so incredibly expensive. And there's a whole nother conversation as to why that is, predominantly having to do with the cost of unions and the cost of just New York City real estate and the cost of living in New York, all those things.
Sure.
But what has been tremendously successful is the distribution of theater. And, if you go back into the 50s and 60s and the regional theater movement and the touring that occurred, it brought theater into the communities. And then you have, theater education that has occurred over the last 30 years. Theater education and theater in high schools is so much different than when you and I were in high school. It's so much more mature. And there's many, many more high school drama programs now. And that's, just a testament to the stewardship that our generation has done for the theater. And that's kind of what we do at Broadway Licensing. Our goal is to distribute theater, not from a video standpoint, but from a standpoint of inspiring production in the local community, supporting production in the local community, because those productions done by people and viewed by people actually reach so many more people than Broadway could ever reach. It doesn't become a destination. It becomes a classification, right?
Yeah.
And so kids at Raleigh High School are going to do a Broadway show, right? I'm going to sign up to do the Broadway show, right? It's a classification. I'm going to do the Broadway musical, insert title here. We're going to do the Broadway play, insert title here. And so that concept of theater at that particular level creates not only the community within the school and within that particular group, but then the people who see it, and it exposes not only the kids, but also that particular community to the thoughts and ideas that are in that content.
Yeah.
As a long-winded way to answer,
no, it's great.
We really try to get to the grassroots of inspiring it at the local level. That's what we do, and that's our special sauce.
Yeah. There's so many different directions that we can go from there. And I'll take it maybe from the mental health standpoint first, right?
Yeah.
Like as we saw during COVID and after COVID, and I've read a lot about this, you know, people who have chronic pain, people who maybe have depression or anxiety, that acting, as an example, can be not a cure, but can really aid and help and support them as they're going through this, right? Putting themselves out there. Because all of a sudden, my guess is you're focusing on something that's so far outside of what you're comfortable doing that in that moment, you're probably forgetting about pain. And there's a lot of science and psychology to that. And that comes from, I think what you're saying, from watching, like watching the actors act, and also from performing. And there's another side to this, because live theater, right? Like you hear, I know these lyrics in my head because I've heard it in my car so many times. You talk about Beetlejuice, like I have to do this shit 8 times a week, right?
Yeah.
That's a great line. And my daughter and I talk about it, and he has to have that voice and that deep raspy voice he had to have to perform that line every single day, 8 times a week, right? That's a lot. So the mental health side of it from the actors, which you referenced the unions a little bit. So there's two sides to this, and you can take that in many different directions yourself. But how do you see that from just the mental health side, again, using your word complex?
Sure. So there is a whole segment of our industry that's theater therapy, right? And I think theater can be therapy for sure. I think the actual act of going or being in a show is incredibly transformative. And that's where the biggest value comes from. Whether you're participating in from a production standpoint, or remember, you're participating in from a audience standpoint. You are not passive, right?
Mm.
And it's funny because you go back to kind of like the moments and times where people's phones go off in the audience, right? And like, we can hear you, or people talk like, we can hear you. It's not a passive thing. You are actively participating in this experiment that is the live theater.
Yeah.
All of that, and that communion and that cathartic experience, and when it's done really well, people come out of it. And I do believe it changes hearts and minds, and it can have a very positive impact on people's mental health, for sure, from an audience standpoint. There's another part that I was thinking about this story. A friend of mine had the very great honor to be cast in Phantom.
Mm.
And when we were coming out of college, he was in Phantom as one of his first jobs. And then he stayed in Phantom. And he was in Phantom for 17 years.
Wow.
And right around year, I think 7 or 8, we went to brunch one day, and I was like, yes, how's it going? And the truth was, he had kind of a response that you wouldn't expect, which was like, it's a job. Right. And I was like, come on, you're on Broadway. And, you know, he said, Sean, I do the same show and I live the same moment to moment life. It's like Groundhog Day, 8 shows a week. And he did it for 17 years.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, wow, okay. That's not something that gets talked about very often in the industry.
Right.
Be careful what you wish for. You just might get it, because yeah, there's something to that. And he couldn't leave the show because he had a family, and that show wasn't going to not be on Broadway, right? And like, it was a steady gig. And so he had this great job, but he couldn't take the risk as an artist to move on to something different. So that's reminded me, like, you know, the actors go through a process, and the actor's kind of journey in the business is fascinating as well. Yes, it can be very exciting. And, you know, there are moments of complete and immense joy, but there is a lot of hard work. It is a lot of hard work that goes into it for sure. And sometimes not the things that you necessarily think, which is like the audition. No, sometimes the job itself is the hard work too.
The job itself. Yeah, I would imagine. It's funny you brought up that time where like when the audience is engaged with it. Like I remember I think it was my second time seeing Rent, right? Mm-hmm. So it comes right out of the intermission and it goes right into Seasons of Love in New York. And I don't know what it's like today, and hopefully I get to see that here in a couple months, but that they were still letting people in and they're walking in front of you. So it's like going like this as Seasons of Love. And some people have never seen it. Some people have seen it. And you're just like, that's frustrating, right? In a live experience. And you deal with that, right? Because maybe the seats are uncomfortable or you have the tall person with the top hat on in front of you. And I guess maybe that's part of the experience that you're talking about before. Sometimes you nail it and no one's in front of you and your child can see the stage clearly. And other times it's not perfect, right? It's like you go to a sporting event. Sometimes your team just doesn't do it that day. You know, I think there's another time, I think my wife and daughter went to see Rent. This is recently, right after COVID. And she said there was people in the audience and they thought they're at a rock concert. So they're singing along to every song.
Yes.
And I think it was an adjustment period for a lot of people that they're back out in public and they're acting like you said.
We saw a lot of that.
Yeah. So was that happening in New York too?
It was happening in New York and in London. There was a lot of singing along with the shows, which was like both kind of like not so great and also kind of awesome.
because
it obviously didn't come a place from negativity or, you know, trying to do anything wrong. It came, I think, from a place of absolute love and enjoyment and being so repressed for so long.
Right, right.
You know, that people wanted to celebrate being together. I think part of that's died down. I think so.
Yeah, yeah. That's a very positive outlook on it. And I think touching too on the topic of like what it can do for you. And I referenced my daughter a couple of times because it's just big part of, obviously a huge part of my life.
Sure.
She is, but like her love of theater. And we went to Chicago and we saw Hamilton and she'd heard the music, but you haven't seen the production. And Hamilton, it's been some years, I don't know, like 6-7 years ago about. And we had gotten seats in different places and we had been talking about it. And so she was sitting with part of my family and I'm over here with my son. And at intermission, she came and I remember it. I'll never forget it. Like she runs into my arms, jumps in my arms and just hugs me at intermission.
Yeah.
And that moment's amazing. But it's what that show, as an example, like she has this love of history. And I honestly credit a lot of it to her love for Hamilton and the conversations that have taken place as a result of that. And seeing it from just a completely different perspective, right? Like for obvious reasons. And I mean, we have the Hamilton book at home. We talk about it. We reference it. I mean, it's not even history. It's rap history you can talk about. Like, and I talk because I grew up in that era of like, you know, Gen X and, you know, the rap music that we grew up with.
Yeah.
And so we'll reference and pull out those lyrics. And all of a sudden you're just going down these rabbit holes of information. And you have this person who just, and she's studying US history again, and she comes home, she's like, Dad, we talked about this today, and here's what happened, and dissecting like what was going, it's just amazing to me that a show that can be entertaining, it's way more than that, right? It just is.
It's way more than that. We had the exact same experience with Hamilton, and it was great because we would have a conversation, you know, about the battle at Yorktown, and at the same breath, I would be like, but hold on, he's referencing the Beastie Boys, License to Ill. Hold on, let's turn on, let me show you, right? Like this. And
that's
so
it
was
awesome.
Like, okay, he's, you know, he's taking these kind of underpinnings of like, listen to what they're using in the samples here, right? And that influenced the music as well as the Battle of Yorktown. It's awesome, right?
Yeah.
And I think Six has done that as well, very successfully.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, these kind of shows, Chicago does, like, and great thing, I think this generation, maybe even more so than our generation, is starting to unpack the stories from a historical standpoint. You know, I wasn't really so into looking at, like, what was the history of Annie Oakley?
right?
Or what was the history of the French Revolution, right? It was probably more like Les Mis was huge, right?
Yep.
Or the Paris Opera, or whatever, you know, at that point in time, those were the big hits on Broadway. But for somehow, we've done a better job now, the industry has done a better job of equating, you know, or inspiring kids to really jump into the history or to the social or political aspects of what this means. Because things can be very political and social commentary, but also be very entertaining.
Absolutely. Yeah, I remember going to New York at a young age. My mom took me, you mentioned Les Mis, and the other musical we saw was Tommy.
Yeah.
And The Who was playing a lot in our house at that time.
Sure.
And to see that transform itself onto a stage, right, in a musical, that was eye-opening. And I think people had that experience, obviously, with Rent was another one.
Yeah.
Which just, it changed a lot. And going to Rent, and obviously more so even Hamilton, now we can watch on Disney Plus. And so we do watch it, right, a lot. And so here's this musical production. And this is getting into Broadway on demand, I suppose. And what Hamilton did, I would imagine, ruffled some feathers maybe, or also brought people into theater that otherwise wouldn't have been able to see it because they can pay whatever five now, who knows, it's $15 a month for Disney Plus. But you can participate in theater from your couch. So I think that was during COVID and they fast-tracked it and got it live onto or got it onto Disney Plus. Like, what was that like in the theater community when Hamilton said, this is what we're doing?
Yeah, it's a huge question. The digitization of art has occurred in every art thus far except theater, by and large, on the global standpoint, right? So, you know, music, certainly, film, television, they're all digital products. I'm more curious, and there's proponents, and it's a philosophical thing, right? About, is it theater if it's digitized? I don't know the answer to that. Mm. I'll tell you something, a different thing. There's an argument, and you know, the other big argument is, well, if people can watch it on their couch, they won't come to the theater. So I'm a huge, huge fan of the band Phish. You know Phish?
Oh, yeah.
All right. So yep. I got every recording. I got the Phish app. I can listen to it anytime. I listen to it. Probably 60 to 70% of my music is that's what I'm listening to.
Yep.
And I'm seeing 10 shows a year.
Yeah.
So in no way, shape, or form does it stop me from going to consume 10 shows in person a year. Right?
Yeah.
So I can listen to whoever. My daughter's, you know, huge into Olivia Rodrigo right now, right?
Oh, yeah. And like, yeah, of course.
That's on play all the time. And yes, we want to go to the live experience because the live experience is a premium experience. At least we know from the ticket price, it's supposed to be the premium experience.
It's supposed to be, right? Yeah, I know. Right?
And yeah. It's still, I'm a Yankee fan and a Rangers fan and Giants fan. And yes, I like watching it on TV, but I certainly like going to the game a lot better. You know, and that's the premium experience. And I don't know why theater would be different. I'm not saying it isn't or it is. I'm just saying I'm not sure about why it wouldn't be different.
Yep.
I think watching it on film is great. But like you said, you've watched it on film a bunch of times and you can't wait to come back to New York to see Hamilton for the third time in person.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
So, right. So now, is it theater? I don't know. My opinion is if you shoot 4 or 5 performances with 12 cameras and you put it in a studio and you edit it, my opinion is that's not theater. That's a film of a theatrical production. If you, what I call UFC it, maybe, right? If you pay-per-view it, maybe. Hey, it's opening night of Back to the Future on Broadway. One night only, $59.99. Like,
right.
Maybe that's theater. Maybe that's theater from home. Right? It's not the exact same experience, but because it's temporal and you can't pause it, right? I kind of like that idea for it. That's where we were going with Broadway on Demand. That's the thing that interests me is that more so from a standpoint of theater, going back to the first thing I said, theater is a temporal art form. Well, let's not change the intrinsic value of what makes it temporal, and that's time-based. So if you want to watch it, and if you want to watch it at home, that's of interest, and then there's a lot of value to that. Because there's a lot of people who can't afford the crazy prices. There's a lot of people who just can't make it physically to the theater, right? And I'm talking about certainly subscribers or people who are lifelong theater members who no longer can drive or will drive at night, right? Or who can't travel that far, who can't make it to Broadway to see, because there is a quality difference. Broadway productions, right? They are the New York Yankees. Oh, right?
Yep.
There's a quality difference. And so seeing that, but getting that into people's homes. And then the last piece of it is, you know, I go back to those who are economically disadvantaged, right? Does that mean that they shouldn't have? Maybe theirs, I would propose that they're probably the people who need theater the most.
Yeah.
And so bringing it to people has great value. And if you're able to bring it to people while keeping many of the same constructs of the theater, which is the time-based of it. And yes, if you're going to get up and go get some popcorn, you're going to miss something.
Yeah.
That's probably okay. Again, opinion, right? And yeah. Yes, the time to do that is intermission if you don't want to do something. Yeah. So you keep those kind of things. And there's probably a digital playbill, right? That there's a QR code and then you get it on your phone. And right. And so you can have that part of the aspect of that journey.
Yeah.
Right. And maybe it should even be more enhanced like NFL does. Maybe there's, you know, commentary before, middle and after, and, you know, and there's a play by play. I don't know.
Right? But yeah.
That sounds interesting to me more so than, hey, we're going to film this thing for archival purposes with the original cast. That's cool. But to me, that's an archival film.
Yeah. And I guess it comes down to, are people still showing up, right? Are people still going to see Hamilton after you can watch it on Disney, right? You can see clips of what they've done. I know they performed at the White House. So you can get the songs in different ways. Personally, I agree with you. I mean, people saw Taylor Swift in concert. They're going to go see the movie and they're going to listen to the music endlessly. Like Dave Matthews is one of the artists out there that allowed, you know, people to record at his concerts and they still go to his concerts years yeah. later. Right. And that to me, sometimes people see the wrong side of it. Like, well, if I give it away, they're not going to go. No, now they might crave it.
That's right.
Even more.
So there's a great book out there called Grateful Dead Marketing. Okay.
Yeah.
The Grateful Dead was the first band to do the whole taping thing. Right.
Yep.
And what they realized was that what the taping did was it was marketing. They were getting music into the hands of people. And, you know, most artists, bands, that you have a general audience space, and then you have fans, and then you have super fans, right?
Yeah.
And the super fans are going to consume everything that you can possibly consume, right? And the same thing happens with Broadway. There are certainly super fans of certain shows, and they're going to consume it no matter what. And what you want to do is, of course, you don't want to cannibalize. And that's the art of actually running the business and managing the intellectual property. So that way you maximize the value of it for all the artists. But also there's a sense of how can you continue to engage the community so the community can perpetuate itself and build a momentum, which also helps the value of the IP.
Yeah. And once you go, and to your points earlier about like the experience that you gain from being at a show, and participating in that show. Because I've always found it interesting that it's not always the lead, right? That's always, we're always focused on the lead, right? That, but there's these not lead, right? Maybe obscure, this individual, and maybe they don't even have any lines. But every time they're on stage, there's something you pick up. There's something you notice. And I've always felt that way about like every show I've been to. It's like, there's something about that. And I don't care if it's Broadway or if it's middle school theater. There's something, maybe the kid said something super funny and just the way they carry themselves on stage. You're just like, now, because if you're watching that on television and it's cut to something else and you only see Leslie Odom Jr., but over here on the side of the stage is it, well, you have to go to theater. You have to go to New York. You have to go to Chicago. You have to go to your local theater to see that. And I think once people experience it, that's why they crave it more, because it is that different experience. The mistakes matter, right? Going to a Luke Combs concert and what something unique happens, or it starts raining, or I don't know, but you only get that when you're there. And that's what people are craving.
Yes.
Or could crave.
I agree. The other piece of it is, you know, the seating in New York at the theaters, it's designed purposefully to be uncomfortable.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. This is true.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So the whole notion of actually why the seats are tight is because when you have a visceral reaction, if you remember when you were kids, like you would lay down and you put your head on somebody's stomach and they would start laughing, then you would start laughing, and then the next person would start laughing, and like all of a sudden you were all laughing, you had no idea what you were laughing for, right? There's something about the actual physical vibration of the people next to you. And that's why the audiences are kind of packed together. There's this physical vibration. I feel like I'm speaking New Age right now, but it's true. I swear,
it's true. Yeah, yeah.
I'm a really down to earth guy. But there's a physical vibration that happens with the audience, that because of that, you are literally physically connected. And you know, with this, with the armrest, right? You're physically connected to people who are next to you, who you know and who you don't know, right?
Yeah.
And that becomes one kind of amoeba of a body that helps the whole kind of communal experience occur. It's the same thing when you go to any sporting event and they score and you're high-fiving the dude behind you.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't know these people, but all of a sudden it just became a communal experience, right? That happens in theater. That happens in person. So you're never going to be able, no matter the at-home experience, and many people argue that NFL at-home experience is superior to the in-person experience, right? They've made it so good with HD, right? But you're never going to get the communal experience at home because you don't have, at least in the Broadway theater, 1,000, where in the case of an NFL stadium, 50,000 people all moving as one.
Right. And the other thing is in theater, and I don't know this to be a fact, but I don't think they're getting in fights in the stands like they might be in an NFL stadium. Right? You see those videos and sometimes it's gotten a little crazy. Like, I think fans have kind of taken it and they're like...
Yeah, you know, I've often thought, I was like, there's got to be a podcast show or like a video podcast show of like two dudes going to Broadway shows and like pre-gaming and like...
Tailgating.
Painting their faces, tailgating and painting their faces. Right. Like, you know?
We need that.
Like, I was like, there's gotta be a show there.
That'd be good.
It's a lot of fun to have.
Absolutely. And I think everyone needs this. And I don't know what, like, the old history, I've seen the movies and you've seen the pictures and Shakespeare and all, like, what that looked like. And they catered to the queen or they catered to the super wealthy. And, you know, there was still, like, I don't know, there's other people in that theater. But I think it's super important for everyone to have an ability to see a show in some capacity. No different than it is to have the ability, I think of Broadway Dreams, which travels around, and my daughter had done it this summer.
Yeah.
And we showed up for the production and the talent, and they came from all over the place. So I know they go to different cities, but we're in Charlotte and it happened to be like 10 minutes from our house. Mm-hmm. And the talent was amazing. And then you would see some of these individuals and then they would talk about it. And some people were there on a scholarship, like completely paid for, like whatever the cost was. And that's what you need, right? Because what an opportunity that is. You mentioned sports a few times. The way I see it, and, you know, hearing the college process and what goes in and going to get, you know, your MFA, right? Whatever that, what that might be, it's more competitive than sports. It's more possibly time consuming than sports. And there's a lot of money that goes in. I mean, if you're applying for college, I mean, you have to do your audition tapes, you have to travel, you have to do all, and there's no guarantee. They might take 8 kids at Michigan or Carnegie Mellon. And that's a whole nother mental health side of things, right? But that's a lot. And not everyone's going to have that opportunity, just like in sports, right? And certain sports are like hockey and certain sports are going to cater to a more wealthier clientele, let's say. But to have that opportunity for kids to expose themselves, because how do we know? Like, they could be a great quarterback. They also might be the potential lead on Broadway. Maybe that takes them to Hollywood. I don't know, but I think it's the gateway to that next step if they can just participate, even just as a fan, or participate in going to something like a Broadway Dreams or something else.
And that's really what we try to do, right? So when we distribute our shows and we do licensing, it's a licensing business, but it's a false statement of what our business is. We are production enablers and production supporters at the educational and amateur level. And what that does, it's the feeding ground, right? It's the little league of theater. And so we support that to be able to multiple things. One, yes, of course, identify artists and hopeful artists who work their way up through the amateur ranks and move on. And I agree with you. It is just, you know, just like sports. My wife has been a Rockette twice, and I can guarantee you the physical damage that it goes into, you know, that for dancing for 20 plus years, it's just like any athlete. She is an athlete, right? But as it pertains to the kids, it's not only essential, you know, for the educational standpoint, but what we try to accomplish in making everyone a theater person, which is what we stand for. It's kind of a vision of what we want to do with this company. It's the kids who don't do become appreciators and fans of. And that's the same thing in sports. And so we feel that if we can help expand theater across the globe and reach everybody, well, then more people will not only become a fan of theater and build the entire economic base of what the art form is, and then you get like, who knows what comes out of it, because you can expand the economic base of what it is. What can be accomplished obviously becomes much greater, right? And who knows what that is? It's just right? What's the going to Mars of theater, right? But more importantly than that, the entire human race becomes more empathetic, more appreciative, more connected to each other, to the human experience. And that makes real change. When we were working on a startup, because we were a startup, right? We've been 6 years into this company. We were starting the company. We sat around and we said, okay, what is the world like if everybody's a theater person, right? And you'll get to know this. The theater parties are awesome. Theater kids parties are high school, college, they're fantastic. They're always so entertaining. People break out into song, right? And it's like, imagine if everybody in the world was a theater person, right? I've often thought about, you know, how you have like all these wonderful national holidays, and then you have all these other holidays, you know, which is like bring your kid to work day or right, this stuff. I was like, you know what? There should be a dance yourself to work day. How positive would the world be if there was like everybody's going to put on headphones and just dance their way to work, right? Think about the difference. No matter how silly and ridiculous that sounds, the energy that that put forth into the universe, into just dealing with each other and not taking ourselves so seriously, I think a lot more could be accomplished for the human race, and there'd probably be a lot less war and a lot less challenging times if people just had a little bit more empathy and had a little bit more connectivity with each other. That's what theater does, Eric.
Yeah, theater can do that. And I also think you said like a theater kid or theater person, there's a stigma that exists. And it's obviously, there's stigmas all over the place, right? We talked about mental health before, the mental health stigma, seeing a therapist, right? There's stigmas in school. You get identified as this. And once you're in school and once you've decided that's the route you're going, you are that person and that's it. But it's not the case. Obviously, as we've gone through life a little bit, we understand that's not the case and people have different interests. So you could have the person that loves theater that's also a great lacrosse player or that likes doing this or likes traveling, and they can go in all these different places. And so a lot of people, I think, won't do it for the concern that they'll now be classified as a theater person, a theater kid, and that stops people. But so then when you go see like a Davy Diggs, who you're like, he's a cool guy,
he's
right?
A cool
like,
guy.
You just like him. And so you're like, well, I can do that. I would love to strive to be someone like that. Like, I like Patrick Mahomes. I like David, right? That's where kids are going. And I think you need more of those types of things.
Yeah, it was great to see, you know, I think on Hard Knocks when they were following the Jets this year, I think three times they went to Broadway shows, the whole team.
Oh, wow.
And it was great to see, you know, and here they're walking out crying. You know, it's...
Yeah.
And it's like, that's right. It's for everybody. Right. It really is for everybody because that's the universality of what it is, right? We tell universal stories that have universal truths that touch universal people. That's the goal.
Yeah.
And I do think the stigmatization of the theater has, by and large, I think it's changed much. It's much different than when we were kids, you know?
Yeah.
I took a lot of flack when I was in high school for being in the drama club and on the football team and on the wrestling team. And it was like, what are you doing?
Right.
That was unheard of.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So where we've talked about all these things and what's going on, and there's no way we can predict the future, but you're part of the change that exists, right? With Broadway on demand. And I have to get that, right? I have to get that from my daughter. But like, where we got the digitization, you're obviously bringing this, like where your licensing group, Broadway licensing group, what cities, states, countries, like, are you all over the map? Like, what is the future for all of this stuff that we're talking about right now as it relates to the bigger picture of theater?
Yeah, so we're in, I think, about 90 countries right now,
okay.
Which is it's amazing. And so it's really a global footprint, very excited. We've had the great honor to acquire Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, and that is going to be, it's a global phenomenon. And we are very excited because we aligned and those people in charge at Harry Potter aligned with our ideas to bring that title to schools before any other professional theater gets to do the show. And it's really kind of thrilling because you think about it, those characters, our iconic characters, are actually school-age kids. It's about a school. And so we're going to get to see real school-age kids play these characters, right? Which is tremendous. And we have these two productions. The first two productions are happening. There's a production that's going to happen in London first, and then there's a production that's going to happen in Hoboken, New Jersey, second. And that goes to be the first two test schools. And those kids are just the whole community. They're bouncing off the walls because they're going to be the first ones in the world to be able to do this project. And then it's going to be released. And the next piece of it is we're doing the first school in every state. So there's going to be, you know, the honor of to be the first school in every state, and then the first school in every country thereafter do it. So the globalization of what we're doing with that particular title. From Broadway on Demand, I think the thing that was fascinating that we're looking at is internationally, the streaming model is moving very quickly and more quickly than it is here in the States. And I think that primarily comes because the economics associated with Broadway, and they're trying to figure out what that means for them. But in the West End, streaming is happening. It's pretty commonplace now, certainly throughout the UK, certainly throughout Asia. And so those international territories and markets are moving quick. And you're starting to see things like, okay, live from the West End, you know, or opening night, right? And so that's kind of cool. And we're going to see what happens with that piece of the industry. And I think that the last piece of it is what happens when there are so many more people exposed to theater and the diversity of theater makers changes in a big and meaningful way. You know, there's, make no mistake about it, it's been predominantly driven by white men, right? Over the last hundreds of thousands of years, right? And right. So now we're seeing what does a diverse group of artists, storytellers come to say about the world. And it's thrilling to see. I'm learning about stuff I would never, never be able to experience or understand because I'm able to view it through the lens of these artists' stories and it taking place on stage. And that inspires me to learn more about certain things, right? And bring attention to certain stories. And so that's really what theater does great. And I think we're going to see an influx of what that is, which will help expand who gets to see themselves on stage. And therefore, what stories then should be told and can be told in a live theatrical experience. It just makes the tapestry of what we do far more interesting, right? And far more compelling, and gives us then the content to be able to then grow the industry even in a more globalized way, because we have content that speaks to many different people across the world.
Yeah.
So that's where I think it's all going. It's all really exciting and broad and kind of democratizing of theater. It's kind of cool. And I hope, my hope for it is, I can't predict what it's going to do, but my hope for it is that the kids, our kids, are going to learn how to become the stewards of the form. So that way they are going to take what the challenges of the world are when they're adults, and they're going to use this instrument, this art form, to help address and change the world and make it even better for that generation past them. And that's what theater does. It's a tool to help enhance the world and make it a better place.
Yeah, I love that. There's so many aspects of it too, right? Like behind the scenes, the tech, the equipment, the lighting, and what you all are doing to bring it to like expose people to this whole thing. I think we're going to this place of there's so much content, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes you're like, it's just too much. And at times, and there probably is, but at the other ways, it's like, yeah, but how cool is it that anyone can do it? You don't have to go to your local TV show to get featured and talk about your business. Like, you can get on a podcast like this, right? You can have a YouTube channel. You can create your own content. You can go meet up with people. And, you know, actors, I think, you know, you hear about like what was going on in Hollywood, like start a podcast and just start interviewing people or just start talking about things that you're interested in. All of a sudden, now people can hear you talk, right? Mm-hmm. These are those opportunities for people. So as we go in this creative place, like how many more scripts are going to be written?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
It's awesome, right? Like, how is that a bad thing? Like, and even if it doesn't get picked up and it doesn't end up on Broadway, your aim is what matters. Whether you get there or not is, I don't personally think, is the end. Like, it's that process along the way, and things are going to happen as a result, which I'm sure you've gone through your entire life.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I think it just enriches all of it, enriches the entire tapestry of it.
Yeah. Why is it slower here? Like when you talk about West End, UK, like why is streaming picking up slower here when it comes to Broadway than it is overseas?
Sure. I think there's a lot of money at stake, right? And so when there's a lot of money at stake, people become a little bit more cautious as to, you know, what the decisions that are being made. And there are specific stakeholders, whether that's all the way from the actor whose image is being broadcast, all the way to the theater owner who has a venue that they're trying to ensure that there's a limited capacity to drive up value, right? It's supply and demand. So if you have low supply, the demand goes up, right? And if you increase the supply, does the demand go down, right? There are all those questions that people are struggling with. We were just talking recently, at what point in time people believed that televised baseball games would destroy baseball and nobody would ever go to the park anymore, right?
It's crazy. They're ruining fans. I mean, I see it. Baseball is a perfect example. My dad grew up in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. We're from Buffalo. So when he's in South Carolina half the year, he can watch the Guardians, they're called now.
Yeah.
When he's in Buffalo, he can't because they're blacked out.
They're blacked out, yeah.
In Charlotte, you're blacked out from the Braves, the Orioles, the Nationals. I'm just like, you want to raise Braves fans, let the kids watch the games on television. Right. They can't watch them. So how are they going to become fans of the team? I went to NHL does it too. My daughter was playing hockey, my youngest daughter. And so we went to a Hurricanes game, which is about 2.5 hour drive from Charlotte. And she was like really into it. She loved it. You come home, can't watch the games here because they're blacked out. It's crazy. So I agree with you. And I think if anyone's listening to this, that's making decisions over there, like give people access, they will crave more.
Totally
if it's
agree.
Good, if the product, at the end of the day, if the product and the content, I used the word product before, if the content's good, they will pay for it. If it's not, they won't. Okay. So they're going to learn that one way or the other.
That's right. I do have a prediction though on this. I will predict. I actually think it's going to happen at the grassroots level before it happens at the Broadway level, because it already is. Most, and you'll see this with your daughter, most schools tape their show and then they create it into a DVD or VHS tapes when we were kids, right? But now it's a digital file.
And then
you can take it home and you can show it to grandma who couldn't fly in to see the show. Most schools do that. And sometimes they even charge for it, even though they're not supposed to. It's a whole like black market thing that's occurring, right?
Yeah.
And we're seeing there's a company called Play On Sports that launched, I think, about 15 years ago. And now they're in 19,000 high schools and they're doing millions of sporting events, high school sporting events a year. And NBC just launched a high school sporting event streaming. And I think you may see streaming for shows at the high school level before you ever see it at Broadway. So that way, grandma and grandpa, who live 2,000 miles away, can watch the show.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That should happen. And it just builds up from there, right?
Yeah. That may be the thing that turns the tide because, you know, if there's enough money that's generated from that particular model, then it moves on into very well. Hold on, there's a lot of money here. And when there's someone a lot of money there, then all of a sudden people are taking notice.
Yeah. Is there a lot of competition for the licensing that you're doing with the schools and all these different places for what you all are doing from a business standpoint?
Yeah, there is. We have a couple competitors in our space. They're all lovely people who work and, you know, but it's only a few globally because it's kind of a niche within even a cottage industry. And so the competition is usually for the, you know, the top shows, the things that are coming down the pipe, whether that be Harry Potter, right, or Back to the Future, right? And so the competition at that particular level. And then, of course, there's sales and marketing that goes out to all the different schools and, you know, hey, do this show. Are you looking for this show or that show, whatever it is? And sometimes there's even internal competition. They're deciding between teen shows and your own catalog base.
Okay.
So yeah, that definitely does occur.
Okay. So it's a relationship, probably.
It's a lot of relationships.
Like any business in marketing.
It's a lot of relationships, yes.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, Sean, this is amazing. Like I said at the beginning, I was super excited to talk to you. I've learned a ton and I'm excited to continue to see what y'all are doing. And I'll see it because, you know, as my daughter continues to perform and just gets into the theater, we're always trying to find. And there's stuff popping up on YouTube. So you can still see theater, right? Like there's bootlegs there. Not that I get that. That's not the right way to do it. But you're going to find clips of all this stuff that's out there. But
yes, you are. Yeah.
I'm fascinated by it. And so this has been awesome.
Yeah. Well, thank you. This was a great conversation, Eric. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. And how do people learn about you? Broadway Licensing Group, Broadway On Demand.
Yeah. Go to broadwaylicensing.com or broadwayondemand.com and you can check us out and all the different titles. Or you can go to License Cursed Child if you're specifically interested in Harry Potter.
Awesome. Thank you, Sean.
All right, bud. Have a good one. Take care.
In case you haven't noticed, we love podcasts. In fact, we love building podcasts, everything from development to production. Because of all that, we're building a one-of-a-kind podcast network. If you have a podcast or looking to launch a new podcast, then we should talk. You can message me on Twitter at @Eric_Kaz or hit us up any way that works for you. Let's talk about your podcast joining this one-of-a-kind podcast network.